coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Hey, welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022. I'm Doug Hagman, of course. I want to welcome you to this segment of this episode. We have a lot to get into. I've got a lot to get into, of course. Everything in my view right now, in my analysis, investigative analysis, perhaps that's a better statement or better way of stating it, goes back to the upset that Donald Trump caused in the presidential election. We know that Hillary is going to, and folks, I know you know this, okay? But if you consider that the world, so to speak, a jury, and you trying to explain this, me trying to explain this, a lot of times it's repetitive, and it's irritating. I know that. But we have to go back to the beginning when Donald Trump came down that stairway. I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of investigation, and actually I've been making a lot of telephone calls to individuals inside the intelligence community, both active and no longer active, retired, and trying to get a handle on certain things that happened at Trump Tower around the time Donald Trump descended that staircase. And around that time, you had, again, around that time, I'm not going to give any specific dates or anything like that, you had things taking place within Congress, specifically the Awan brothers. Do you remember that? Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Awan brothers. Okay. The computer that was left in on Capitol Hill to be found, the laptop to be found, and how the FBI handled that, the Capitol Police handled that. You can start, when you approach this at that granular level from an investigative vantage point, you can see the setup. You can see the setup, well, more appropriately stated, you can see the attempted takedown or the gears being put into place to take down our republic. One thing that I think everyone can agree upon is Donald Trump being a polarizing figure, but a polarizing figure to anyone who stands against the constitutional republic. Okay, he created this movement. It is my investigative analysis when I'm looking at this that global leaders saw this. In fact, global leaders were informed by domestic leaders through back channels. Hey, this is happening, and this is upsetting what we want to do with the world. Of course, we want to take over the world. We want to get rid of cars. And I've gone through, and I'm putting together a special program, a special segment, where you will see Donald Trump in his debates, in his interviews early on, saying, look, they're going to get rid of cars. They're going to get rid of beef. They're going to push the green agenda. He called Greta Thunberg, referenced her Nazi-like, okay, in her approach to the environment and what her goals are. So what we have, and again, I know it seems like I'm covering ground that you're familiar with, but we need to establish, at least again in my investigative analysis, this pattern of this continuing course of criminal conduct by the globalists, by the people in this country. And again, at the same time all of this was going on, a couple of things. You know, during Obama's reign, there was some border shucking and jiving with the border, right? You saw that. It wasn't certainly not as bad as it is today. But when you go back and overlay, for example, what is taking place today, could you see what's happening today at the southern border, this invasion happening under Hillary? I can. So you have all of these different players that fought and were fighting against Donald Trump. You had the FBI weaponized by Obama. And remember Obama. Remember when he said, look, we need to establish a civilian force equal to our own military. Remember that. What was he talking about at that time? Now, many people will point to the civilian, well, not really not a civilian force, but the IRS, the 87,000 IRS agents, the Criminal Investigation Division expansion of the U.S. Treasury by way of these agents. Antifa, of course, BLM, all of these anarchist groups, perhaps more appropriately, but all combined. You can see the evolution. And remember Occupy Wall Street, going back further, and the Occupy movements. Okay, so in against that backdrop, Donald Trump comes on the scene. I believe Donald Trump was selected by, or tapped, suppose, I guess that's a better way, tapped by someone within the patriotic community, very high-ranking officials saying, look, we're going to lose our country. You've got, we did a poll, or we did the study, you've got the only shot, or you've got the numbers. You can do this. Are you willing? And he said, yes. For the sake of my country, yes, I'm willing. And I don't know how the conversation went. Probably said, yeah, I got some baggage, man. I mean, I got a lot of baggage. You know the baggage I got. Hey, well, that's all right. You can overcome that. And MAGA was born. MAGA obviously was the biggest threat against every oligarch in our government, globalist oligarch in our government. It threatened all of their careers, whether it's Adam Schiff or even the people at the time, like Paul Ryan. Think about that. We have to go back and we have to reassemble the crime scene or look at the crime scene at this very granular level in order to really appreciate how deep and how much trouble we are in right now. We are in a boatload of trouble right now. When you have, again, when you have FBI agents raiding a former president's home, and I see this on social media. Well, that's his golf resort. That's not his house. He lives there. Hey, think San Clemente to some extent. Nixon. Okay, you can think of it in that fashion. Compare it that way. But the bottom line, that's his home. That's where he has his clothes. He has his shoes under the bed. I don't know if that's but his wife's clothes. They live there. That is his castle, as it would be your castle. Okay, this is important because, again, I'm bringing forward here things that are happening today that will impact not just the 2020, not just the midterms, but for henceforth. We are seeing more whistleblowers coming forward right now. And this is something that is being reported on as we speak. More whistleblowers within the FBI reporting on things taking place on the seventh floor of the the FBI and on the top floors of the Department of Justice. We're seeing that take place. But we're also seeing this integration through, and again, now, let me toss something else at you again. Remember that meeting on the last day Obama was in office? There was a meeting between Obama, Susan Rice, Victoria Nuland. Remember? Do you remember? And it's important to have a good memory or take good notes or have somebody like me remind you. But do you remember there was a meeting on the last day? In fact, almost during the swearing-in ceremony when Obama said, or when Susan Rice sent an email to herself stating that we had this meeting and everything was done by the book. That's important because you just don't normally do that just to do it. Okay, you got that? Now, on the 8th day of August, which I believe almost every day right now that we're seeing when anything happens is a seminal moment in time. You know, people say January 6th, they equate that to, and then I could smack them, with 9/11 or Pearl Harbor, that was January 6th. They either have no clue what they're talking about or they're intentionally attempting to pollute the intellectual aspect of all Americans, intellectual bias of all Americans. On August 5th, the U.S. attorney went to Bruce Reinhart, the judge. Bruce Reinhart signed off on a search warrant of the home of a former president and upcoming presidential candidate, as far as we know. They sat on that for 3 days, although they cited national security. I'm not going to show you the video. I mean, the pictures of the, you've seen it. Okay. They sat on it for 3 days. It was that, it was so important, national security. Hey, nuclear secrets, right? Everything you hear read on social media or hear, you can just about forget. There was a supporting affidavit that's going to be is going to be released, but it's going to be heavily redacted to the point it will be useless. They don't want to give away that affidavit, that supporting affidavit, with every action, with every search warrant, with every warrant. You have a document that you've got to say, this is what's going on. Okay. Here's what's going on. And this is why we need the warrant. And then the warrant, of course, you just see that page, see page A, okay, or page one. That page one is what they don't want you to see. And if we have a chance to see it, it's going to be blacked out big time. Now, they've got until Thursday. DOJ has until Thursday to make the appropriate redactions. But to his credit, and I don't know why, and I say that almost with a pain in my side, Bruce Reinhart, the judge, says, look, redact lightly. Okay, but I digress. So here's where we're at with this. Oh, and one more thing about the raid as well. And it was a raid. It was a raid with a shock and awe intent, as I said yesterday. And it was a raid to intimidate Donald Trump, every member of his family. But equally important, it was a raid to intimidate you, because if they can do this to Donald Trump as a former president, they can do that to any one of us and will do that to any one of us. Okay. Understand that when a president leaves office, and you're not going to hear the same old song and dance here, but when a president leaves office, it is the General Services Administration that packs up the boxes. If Donald Trump says, look, this is the stuff to go, the GSA packs up the boxes, labels them, and takes them. The GSA reportedly took additional boxes beyond what President Trump had called for. Just keep that in mind. But the GSA is also responsible for the inventory of what's in those boxes. And of course, there's a process that you go through, somewhat of a process of declass, before they leave the White House. But this has been going on. I mean, this process has been going on since the late 30s, early 40s. There have been, right now, Barack Hussein Obama, people say, well, how can he have all of these boxes in a 6x10 storage unit at his home at Mar-a-Lago? He shouldn't have those. Folks, Obama has 30 million documents in Chicago. 30 million documents. So this is an entire pretext against President Trump, but to quash the MAGA movement. And you can bet when Congress returns, the January 6th committee is going to turn up the heat like you've never seen anything like it before in your life. And there will be shock and awe attempts by the January 6th committee to forever extinguish nationalism, American exceptionalism. This is for all the marbles. I'm telling you, I'm warning you as loudly as I can. I cannot give you any specific warnings as to what's going to happen, but I can tell you this. There will be arrests. There will be public figures taken down, taken off air. There will be indictments. There will be charges filed. That's how serious this is. And at the same time, there's going to be an energy crisis, in quotation marks. There is going to be banking issues, monetary economic issues, supply chain issues, even though it seems fine now. There's a lot of things that are happening. And you know what? None of this is by Biden, right? None of this is Biden. It has clean hands, as we say in the investigative and legal realm, clean hands, the doctrine of clean hands. And to show you just, or to make sure you know just how clean his hands are, on today's show prep, this will be in Hagman. This will be at HagmanReport.com. You can see the entire link, or you can source the link for yourself. Video number one. This is the current Spox for Biden. What is her name? Jackson Brown. You know, running on empty. Okay, no, Brown Jackson. This is her saying that Biden knew nothing about this raid, but this is an absolute lie, and it's a provable lie, but here she is nonetheless. Go ahead and play it.
And then you've said repeatedly that the president learned of the news of the FBI visit to Mar-a-Lago the other day through news reports. Can you tell us anything more? Was he watching the news? Was he scrolling Twitter? Did someone in his staff flag it for him?
I can tell you this. He was not aware of the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it, before it happened. So I can tell you that did not know it. He learned about it really like all of us did. I'm sure maybe someone on his team flagged it for him, but he was not aware. What I can tell you definitively and for sure, he was not aware of this. Nobody in the White House was. We were not given a heads up, and we did not know about what happened yesterday.
Okay. That is a demonstrable lie to the press and to the American people. Merrick Garland stated in his 3.5-minute press conference, which he was 35, 40 minutes late for, that he agonized and did everything, you know, prayed over essentially what he should do next. Those aren't his words, okay? But he was very, extremely careful and cautious about handling this. Again, we're supposed to believe now this is of such a criminal nature and such a national security issue, even involving potentially nuclear secrets, that they're going to wait 3 days. And the judge is even going to give them 2 weeks before they have to use this warrant. You know it's a lie. So what did... Again, what did Donald Trump have? What does he have? And what do others have? And I know I went over some of this yesterday, but I want to drive this point home. I'd like you to take a look at this video. This is from Tom Fitton. This is a video featuring Tom Fitton, and he's on Fox News. It's 3.5 minutes long, and he's talking about the environment of Hillary and Bill Clinton and Biden and Strzok and Hunter and the whole shebang. This factors in to the raid. This factors into what will happen next and what the deep state is planning next. Go ahead and play video number two on this one.
Yesterday's raid is just one part of the government's legal assault on Donald Trump. Today, a federal appeal court ruled that the Democratic Party lawmakers can gain access to Donald Trump's tax returns. Tom Fitton is the president of Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch just filed a motion to unseal the warrant used in the raid on Donald Trump's home. And Tom Fitton joins us now. Tom, thank you so much for being with us. What are your thoughts on not only Donald Trump's tax returns, but the motion you have filed to see the warrant that led to this FBI raid?
Well, you know, to me, it's two sides of the same coin, right? You have this unprecedented attack on the former president with this raid that is inherently controversial and necessarily demands disclosures about how it happened, who's responsible. So we're asking a federal court to release it as quickly as possible. The DOJ's silence on it is deafening, and we hope that the DOJ doesn't oppose us there, the Biden DOJ, to be clear. But on the other hand, you have the Democrats in Congress use their so-called oversight abilities to target the president personally again, asking for his confidential tax information, taxes from before he was president, taxes from when he was president, and his tax returns from after he's president. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. the courts here in the District of Columbia ratified that abuse, pretended that there's no politics here worth worrying about. And so the president's civil rights, practically speaking, get thrown out the window. And again, the courts have also need to step up and act to protect the structure of our government that's under attack. The presidency's under attack from within. You have Congress trying to blow up our systems of government. And the courts have almost been bystanders in large measure, or just rubber stamping them in the case of the FISA warrants. And in this case, the unprecedented effort to gain our confidential tax information. And as we see with the IRS getting 87,000 new employees, obviously Trump's just the number one target, and the rest of us will all have to worry as well.
All right.
That is certain.
So again, timing is everything, and you have to take a look at what's taking place, especially with the FBI, 87,000 new FBI agents, the war that will be against not just I say Christian patriots, Christian conservatives, but it's the nationalists, it's the MAGA movement. This is a war on the MAGA movement. And I will equate the MAGA movement with Christian conservatives as a whole. And maybe you find issue with that. But in my mind, from an investigative view, this broad brush painting view, I that's what I'm looking at. Same thing. All right. Now, okay, so there is that, the fact that they also, at the same time, and you have to remember, this was a day after the raid took place, all right? This is a day after. So Tom Fitton saying, look, they're going after his tax returns as well. You've got the Southern District of New York. You've got the Washington, Southern District of New York on the state level. You've got the Washington field office of the FBI working with the as well as the Washington headquarters FBI, working with the Department of Justice, working with the Southern, the Florida field office of the FBI. Okay, you've got them all working together. And at the root of this, at least on a domestic scale, you can trace it right back to the normal or the usual suspects. Now, hold on a second. I'm going to tie that together with, I'm going to try to tie that together with the fact that this intelligence community that has been established has been weaponized by Obama and by the globalists and really by the internationals with the international influence here is behind all of this. But there are people above that, you know, layers above that. If we can go to the first video, it would be video number one. This is I mentioned this yesterday. This is an interview. And I wouldn't even call it an interview. This is Jim Acosta talking with the former DHS secretary, Chad Wolf. And listen to what is said here. Listen to what Chad Wolf is saying and listen to what Acosta is saying. But the important part is here. They're talking about a number of issues, including the legitimacy of the 2020 election, which will be a big, big factor moving forward now. Because if you come out against, or if you say, look, we have questions that need to be answered about the 2020 election, even now, today, we will target you. Did President Trump have documents relating to the 2020 election in that cache of documents? That's a question. But let's listen to what Chad Wolf and Jim Acosta are sparring about in this particular interview. Go ahead.
So you think there was election fraud?
I think there's a number of election irregularities, illegalities, and fraud. And I think that's been widely reported.
But enough to alter the outcome of the 2020 election? Election denier?
I would say any type of fraud. Wait, any type of election fraud. No, this is important. Any type of, I don't want to just bypass, was it a little or is it a lot, right? Any election fraud should be addressed. And I don't think we can say just, hey, there's a little fraud, so that's okay.
Who won the 2020?
At the end of the day.
Chad,
I think that's very, very important.
Who won the 2020 election?
Obviously, Joe Biden is president.
No.
I mean, there is I just answered your question.
No, but he is the president, obviously.
He is the president.
I've seen folks from Trump World parse this out and say, okay, Joe Biden is president. We know that. Okay, yeah. that is a matter of fact. Do you believe that he won that election fair and square?
I believe that I just answered the question first. Let me answer it in two parts. One, Joe Biden is president. Two, a number of irregularities, illegalities, and fraud occurred during 2020.
But not sufficient to throw.
I don't have all of that evidence. I think there's been a number of reporting.
You sound like a conspiracy theorist. You sound like an election denialist.
How is that a conspiracy theorist?
Because when you, Chad, you know, let's you look know at, full let's look well at that Wisconsin. Joe Biden won the election. You
let's
know
look at
he
Wisconsin.
Won the election.
Wisconsin Supreme Court says that the way
the
they use drop
Court
boxes
did not want to have anything to do with
the
any
way
of
they
these
use
challenges.
Drop boxes were illegal in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So how do you sit there and say
Supreme
that
Court
that is a conspiracy theory when that happens to be the facts?
Yeah, the Supreme Court wanted nothing to do with anything.
Well, okay,
any of these challenges.
That's fine.
Trump lost over and over and over again. Why not accept that? Why not move on?
I have moved on. And so what we're doing at the America First Policy Institute through our Center for Election Integrity
is actually talking about
a lot of these issues at the state level where we talk about voter ID.
Yeah.
We talk about scrubbing voter rolls. We
okay,
talk
in
about
the
same day
time,
election.
Right there. And I would urge everyone to watch the entire clip. There's another few minutes there. What Acosta is tasked to do here is to contaminate you, the public, the jury pool. Okay, Acosta is attempting to contaminate the jury pool to believe that Chad Wolf, DHS secretary, crazy. It's a conspiracy theory that everything has been litigated. All the evidence of voter fraud has been shown. It's been shown to be unproven. That's a lie. Okay, so he's contaminating the jury pool in advance of the midterms and in advance of 2024. But that is what all of these people and media sources have been tasked to do. All right. So how does this all relate? How does this go together, this seemingly mishmash of stuff? Well, here's the bottom line. The DOJ has been weaponized. In the weaponization, yes, against Donald Trump. And they will attempt to prevent him from being from even running for president, even if they have to put him in jail. That's what they're going to do. They're going to attempt to prevent us from voting for Donald Trump, even if Donald Trump isn't around, anyone who represents the Make America Great Again, philosophy or bias. This is what this raid was all about. It is my contention, and I will say this again, that the FBI went in there for three reasons at Mar-a-Lago. Number one, the public stigma. You cannot get your reputation back. The public stigma. Imagine Imagine there being evidence so dramatically over the top that the FBI raids a former president. Boy, we dodged a bullet with Donald Trump, didn't we? And the narrative continues. And see, President Trump lost that election. Say it, Chad. I'll beat you until you say it. They're continuing to form this narrative when the opposite is true, is provably, demonstrably true. So number one, they went in there to create that stigma. Number two, they went in there to retrieve documents related to Crossfire Hurricane based on reasoned information that I have received. President Trump had at least one, if not more, binders related to Crossfire Hurricane that laid out the 2016 plot with Peter Strzok, with Hillary, with Mark Elias, with all of the players. Okay, laid it all out. They went in there to retrieve that, to make sure that would never see the light of day. And if you think for 1 minute, by the way, that other attempts haven't been made at other properties, I'm going to say surreptitious events, entries, you're mistaken. Donald Trump is anything but stupid. He has documents in other locations and in custody of other people. The third reason, obviously, is to create the pretext using the Presidential Records Act, which is a BS pretext, so he cannot run for president again. And also the fourth, to include all of us in that stigma of anti-American when in fact we are pro-American. That's what is happening right now. And folks, look, just understand this. What is coming is going to be worse than we've seen yet. And Stan Deo is with me here momentarily. I want him to get into, and he'll get into what other things are coming. But I hope you understand how this all connects. Don't go anywhere, because I've got a couple of other things as well. But I want to thank our corporate sponsors, including Lightstream, lightstream.com/Hagmann. Man, they are the greatest. You know, with interest rates on the rise, and they are on the flipping rise. Have you seen them? I mean, man. Anyway. And expenses, too, on the rise. Now might be just the time to pay off your credit cards with a fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream.com/Hagmann. I'm telling you, this is the way to do it. A credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start at just 5.73% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. Folks, this is how you do it. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagmann, and that is LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagmann. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and offers are subject to change without notice. My apologies. Visit lightstream.com/Hagmann for more information. You'll thank me later. You'll be glad you did that. All right. Before I get to Stan, I want to show you this. There's another part of the cultural part of this war that's very important to the left. And I'm going to kind of segue into Stan with this. This is only a minute and a half, roughly. Kamala Harris talking about the Roe v. Wade decision. Okay, I set this up. This is what you're not seeing if you're not watching the mainstream media. This is Kamala Harris talking about the Roe v. Wade decision and how this, overturning that, and how this will lead to overturning the right of the same-sex marriage and overturning all of the other women's rights. And then there's a response on the other side. You've got to take a look at this. Go ahead and play this briefly of Kamala Harris.
That because Justice Thomas, this is what you're referring to, did write a concurring opinion saying the court should reconsider other cases of precedent that protect same-sex marriage, contraception, intimacy and more. Do you think that the Supreme Court is on a path to reverse those as well?
I definitely believe this is not over. I do.
All right. Now, sitting in for Mr. Potato Head, Brian Stelter, is none other than Dan Aykroyd with his response. And how appropriate of a response this is. Here it is.
Jane, you ignorant slut. Bagged out, dried up, slunk meat like you and Michelle Triola know the rules. If you want a contract, sign on the dotted line. Oh, but let's all shed a tear for poor Michelle Triola. There was only testimony that she had sexual intercourse over 40 times with another man while living with actor Lee Marvin. But I suppose that sort of fashionable promiscuity means nothing to someone like you, Jane, who hops from bed to bed with the frequency of a cheap ham radio. But hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, and Michelle Triola, like a screeching, squealing, rapacious swamp sow, is after actor Lee Marvin's last $3 million. I guess what you and Michelle are saying is that when you're on your backs, the meter is running. Well, please spare us, gals, and tell us the rates at the top. Then we can choose which two-bit tarts and bargain basement sluts to shack up with.
And there we go. That's from 1975 or 76, Saturday Night Live. Look, folks, you got to somehow, once in a while, you got to kind of chuckle about things, but you understand that the left and the globalists, they're scared to death about the regaining the cultural high road by Christian conservatives. And with me is Stan Dale, standale.com. I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't bookmark his website, you're missing out. Great Patreon meeting last week. Join Stan's Patreon as well. And also EMP Shields. You're going to need them after you listen to Stan. EMPShield.com. That's EMPShield.com. Use promo code Hagman for $50 off. You can't beat those even with a stick. And even if you do, they still work. So you know something's coming. And it could very well be from the sun or from a man-made EMP. EMPShield.com. There you have it on the screen. Click the link at standale.com or in the link in the program box at HagmanReport.com. All right. Without any further ado, thank you for your patience, Stan. How are you?
Oh, good. Good. Kind of depressed over everything happening, but you know.
Well, you know, that's why I kind of wanted to throw that Dan Aykroyd 75 Saturday Night Live thing in for you a little bit, to lift you up a little bit.
Well, it was funny, but.
But you know what? Nothing. I know.
Yeah,
it's to you. It's to you. Give us the bad news first. And the is there any good news?
Well, let's see. Well, there's interesting news, I suppose.
All right. It's all yours.
Yeah, let's look at slide 42. You're talking about the sun and CMEs and your EMP shield thing. Slides 42, 37, 38. 39. Those are all in the sun today. So Eric, click on, let's see. Yes. Click on slide 37 to start with. Now slide 37 is our usual thing from the LMSAL, imaging. But this shows the magnetic field of the Earth earlier today. And it, you see the lines crossing from the north to the south hemisphere. Over on the left, they're really brilliant coming around. And on the right, you can see in the background, there were some brilliant ones passing from about 8 days ago. But what we're seeing here again is the side of the sun where the magnetic field lines are crossing over the equator and pulling the surface of the sun toward the equator on that side, which stretches the other side of the sun away from the equator. Now, if you now go to slide 42, and that was taken earlier today. Now, this slide shows the flare eruptions on the sun. Now, you see in this slide in the upper right, you see a really brilliant flare coronal mass ejection probably over on that side going around to the back of the sun. But what interested me was all of these little kind of miniature flares all the way around the sun from about 3 o'clock on the picture around to about 10 o'clock on the left. Those are indicative of some very potential areas coming around and just leaving the sun. So for the next week or so, I'm expecting to see some really interesting developments from the sun as far as stuff being thrown at us. Let's look at slide 38. Eric, slide 38. Now, slide 38 is looking at 2 days, October 23rd today and October 24th tomorrow, forecasting where the solar wind is going to hit the Earth. Now, the top image up there is for the 23rd, and you'll notice in the picture there on the kind of what I can see there, the lower left of that picture, if you scroll down just a bit, Eric, you'll see a bunch of yellow and green sprays coming from the sun. Okay. And this shows the if you just move it up, or sorry, move it down a bit there, I can see it. There you go, right there. Okay. This is showing the plasma velocity coming from the sun in the solar wind. And these alternating yellow, green, yellow, green, yellow, green lines can get brighter and hit us, with some severe coronal mass ejections or whatever. We're looking at what's coming around there if you're looking at that top. Now, in the image below that is on the 24th, you just scroll down all the way, it shows that the velocity of the solar wind is going to be its maximum for us on kind of the 25th of August, or just before that, in late 24th. You can see in the green line there by that yellow vertical line. These things tell me the density of the plasma coming at us from the sun, and it allows me to look over the top of the sun and see these things, which is really, a wonderful tool, because even though I can't see the surface of the sun, I can see the solar wind coming out around it and what is coming our way. So there you go.
So now, we're going to get it or no?
We're getting the worst of it today and tomorrow, but what is coming has not yet developed to a spray yet. I'm saying that what is coming, could be very, very busy. There's just a lot of evidence pointing that direction. If you look at, let's look at slide 39, the picture there, the heliographic image that we normally look at. I've drawn some arrows on this. You can see the bottom arrow, the long one, is going toward a bright spot in the middle of a kind of a quiet zone, a coronal hole. And then the next arrow up shows bright active regions approaching us within 5 days. And the same thing with the top arrow there. This is my go-to to look at what we can see of the sun's surface in ultraviolet, the extreme ultraviolet, to see what is going to come around at us. Now, I'm interested in this one here that's at about 50 degrees minus that bottom arrow. I don't know what that is, because when I go back to slide 37 and look at that picture, I don't see that exactly there in the middle of a dark area in the lower left. Anyway, it bugs me. So in slide 37, there's a link to spaceweather.com in slide 37. And if you get to that, it's watching two sunspots that are growing rapidly. Sunspot AR30585 barely existed, and it's grown 10 times what it was when they discovered it. It's called a double sunspot. And if you click on the watch this movie thing on show images spaceweather.com, if you click to that, go to spaceweather.com. Let's see if I can find that for you without that. There you go. That's the GIF of that sunspot as it traverses across the sun. Yeah.
Wow, that's big.
Well, 10 times its original size, and it's a double sunspot. I mean, that's quite interesting. So spaceweather.com usually catches, these exotic things about to happen, or reports on, increased activity in the sun as well. So a very good link for you to click and check with each day. Okay. These are just, telling you to look out for the sun. I think there's still problems coming there. I read rather interesting piece in slide 41, Eric. It's from naturalnews.com, and it's called "The Mass Culling of the Human Herd is Now Underway." Here's exactly how it's being accomplished to achieve mass extermination. Now, when you think about it, you can see a picture on that. If you scroll down just slightly, you'll see a picture that says vaccines, abortion, hunger, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what this is telling you is that the globalists are controlling water availability, food availability, pandemics, energy, and finances, and they're crunching us in between all these four or five major curves, so that we're going to lose a lot of people due to famine, you know, and rioting and war, because there will be local wars, you know, battles between various people wanting food and water and shelter. And you'll see in slide 41 there at the bottom, I say, as globalist advisor Yuval Harari is now saying, the age of humans is coming to an end on planet Earth, and globalists have activated a multifaceted plan to cleanse the planet of all human beings. Well, mostly all human beings. Obviously, it's going to be a survival core, those globalists. But this article is worth a read.
I like him to come here and say that to my face. How's that? Yuval Harari.
Yeah.
I know. Say that to my face. Come on. All right.
It makes you feel like that, doesn't it? It's just, It really makes your blood pump. You think, oh, by golly, you're not in charge of my destiny, but.
You're not the boss of me.
Yeah, that's the way.
The kids.
And they're also, And they know that a massive civilian uprising is just months away. They say that in the article. And, you know, it's kind of like in that Australian movie News or whatever it was. I forget where they. News anchor sticks his head out the window and says, I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, I've had enough. And that's going to happen, you know, in neighborhoods and cities and states and stuff of the United States and all over the world. When people can't eat, you know, the head of the household goes out to find food and take it. Energy, water, all of these things that are so precious to our lifestyle, people are going to be fighting over these resources. You can see it beginning. You know, just the amount of tent cities we have here and reports from Africa, you know, it is really sad to see this. And although we have what we need at the moment here in the United States, our time is coming. It's taking longer, I guess, because there's so many things that they had to control here. But we're being herded to death. That's what it amounts to.
Well, I don't know if you heard about the Amish farmer in Bird in Hand at Pennsylvania. Yes, that's a real town here in my home state, where the FDA, IRS, various three-letter agencies came in and says, hey, you can't do what you're doing. You can't sell your pure organic products to off your farm. Okay, what a bunch of crap. And you know, I'll tell you what, if we allow that stuff like that to happen, then shame on us. I'll tell you what, I will fight to the end to make sure that man is, that farmer is allowed to continue and other farms like that. But go ahead, sir.
Oh, I did see that. And my jaw dropped to see that happening to that man, because he's, you know, the Amish community, which is where it was, you know, they live amongst themselves. They produce everything that they need to consume. They make their own clothes. They use horse and buggy and stuff. And, you know, their use of energy and resources to the rest of the United States is minimal. And so they come in now, the feds, and say, well, you're not paying taxes and, you know, you're doing things that we don't like. So, you know, you're going to have to join the club or we're going to take everything and shut you down. And it just, it's.
They use, by the way, no fertilizer. They don't need it. They don't use any gas, like you said. Mm-hmm. Self-sufficient. So, you know, but boy,
Oh, and not to mention their Christian group.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And this is why in the first segment, I'm telling you right now, we are in so much, we have not seen the hammer drop like they want to drop the hammer, but they have not seen our resolve either. So, but you know, it's a place that you and I, we don't want to be in, and no one wants to be in that antagonistic position. So go ahead, sir.
No, I, it's, as we've said many times in discussing this, we're being forced by a massive chessboard move, or several moves by, you know, Soros and whoever else is out there doing it, to the point where if we don't resist, if we don't rebel against all this, then they're going to take us over without a whimper and put us into prison camps or kill us and take our assets and get rid of us because they don't want us. Or we're going to rise up and organize perhaps little groups of resistance or perhaps bigger groups trying to take back our government by force. And then they'll issue martial law and troops and stuff, and maybe UN troops to quell us. So if we do, we're screwed. If we don't, we're screwed. We're in a pincer bind here, but I want to go down fighting. You know, I realize that's what they're driving us to. So we might as well at least make an effort to stop them.
Then you know what? I'm going to be by your side as well. I'm sure many others, and we're going to arm up. And you know, it's not a threat, folks. You just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, right? It's not right. I mean, we have to fight for what is right for. If we want to keep what we have. And if we want our children to continue to enjoy a good life, people like this Harari idiot, maggot, okay, they need to go. I'm telling you, they just need to go away. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, look, it's easy to get in a soapbox about this because it's frustrating. It is really frustrating. You can hear it in your voice and mine. Yep. I just enough is enough.
Yep.
Anyway, we've reached that point, I'm pretty sure, between now and the end of the year, just like the Harari fellow said, you know, they're expecting in just months we will uprise. You know, we'll rise up against them. They're expecting that. So,
so to that end, what do you say that they're going to do then? What are they going to do?
Well, you know, a few of them may be taken out, but eventually, because they control the government of the United States and other countries as well, they're going to mount troops on a house-to-house level. That's what they've been training them for, to come in and root us out and kill us or lock us up. And because we're a threat, you know, Christian, conservative people. And so they're going to amount against us. And I guess you choose whether you want to let them just shoot you or cut off your head or whatever we're going to do and say, well, okay, that's the way it is. Or are you going to say, you're not coming to do that to me, and I'm going to go down fighting? We won't win in those battles, but in the long run, Christians there will win. You know, Christ will
we should take comfort. We should take glory in the fact that we will win in the end.
And when we talk like this, you know, on, you know, Zoom or on YouTube when they watch this later, I'm sure that the thought police are going to take us down so that we can't, you know, use YouTube or Rumble and things like that eventually, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's when, at least in my case, I'll go in the street corner. I'll go whatever avenue is open to us. You know, and I understand, Stan. I mean, we talk about getting taken down every day, about that possibility. And I think that it's more of a possibility today than ever before, because right now they're desperate. And you can see the desperation in the global size. But I don't want to take your time. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. Well, you're talking, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, I agree completely. And you know, global warming and all these manufactured crises. In slide 52, a group of almost 1,200 of the world's leading scientists and scholars has signed a document to declare that there is no climate emergency. The group, led by a Nobel Prize laureate, signed the declaration that states climate science is based more on personal beliefs, you know, beliefs, and political agenda than rigorous scientific facts. And if you get to the article, you see that they're saying all of this stuff that they're telling you about is emotional stuff, you know, as far as car and cow gas and things like that causing this global climate change. It's something else. And they're taking advantage of that, to hit us with energy shortages and food shortages, because, you know, they're going to cut us off of meat and stuff. That's too expensive for carbon gases or something or other. Excuse me. But, there are some people out there, scientists, who realize, I mean, 1,200 of them in this case, who realize that this is bull dust, all this stuff they're telling us about. We're hurting the environment. Okay. you know, manufacturing in China is probably the worst offender in the whole world, and they do pollute the planet with gases from their industry and stuff like that. And you know, that does need to change. But the biggest offender is, you know, probably the biggest one saying, "Okay, well, it's global climate change and whatever from your fault. So do like we're doing, put your people under communist rule and lock up those who resist or complain, and kill off a bunch of them. You know, let them starve, whatever, so that we reduce the demand on the system. You know, on the Earth system." Yeah.
Yep. That's right. Now, they're setting this up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and in China, I'm talking about slide 53 today here, Eric. China is planning to carry out cloud seeding, a form of weather modification that involves spraying chemicals onto clouds so they rain earlier and try to save the grain harvest after the country's driest summer since records began in 1961. The practice has been used to prevent large storm surges by breaking up clouds, and in the U.S., as a military technique that's since been banned by the United Nations, although the effectiveness of war was in doubt even in the 1970s. Now, the cloud seeding, in 1970s, there were weather warfare agreements made between Russia and the United States, and, of course, other nations, too, in the United Nations, to not use weather warfare to hit crops and things like that. That was not fair. But when I saw this, and here they have this cannon or this thing that's shooting a rocket up in the picture there to explode up into the cloud and put nitrates or whatever over it. You know, they're trying to seed that cloud so that it rains. Well, of course, this hits the people downstream who are normally dependent on the rain, so they're trying to hit it early. And I remembered in the late 1800s that there were shysters in the United States and in Australia that were using cannons and other devices pointed up at the clouds to blow shockwaves up into the clouds to make them rain. And, you know, you can see in slide 50, some of those devices they used back then. They had people so convinced that this would cause it to rain that people were paying horrendous fees to them. And of course the rainmakers got some success occasionally, and they got rich, very rich. They lived like princes when they did that. Let's see here. Let me see if we can see any article on slide 50. These guys, I mean, they just charge horrific fees here. Let's see where it says. Okay. Yeah. Drought has always made people desperate. So rainmaking was a profitable, if inexact, science in the 1800s. Those contracted to bring rain to an area fired cannons at clouds, causing the concussion theory to shake the clouds and make it rain. Or they used contraptions of all manner to try to make atmospheric conditions amenable to precipitation. And often they did nothing and hoped for a lucky shower so they could collect the money. And, you know, these guys, they collected a lot of money. They lived like princes. They talk about here in one of the cases, Melbourne, rainmaker Melbourne, can't read that, Melbourne T. Frank or something. In 1895, the erstwhile Western Rain King, whose services were in urgent demand in the West 2 or 3 years ago, and that's an article in 1895, is located in this city. And speaking of his experience as a rainmaker, the Melbourne admitted that the whole thing was humbug, you know, a scam, and that he never possessed any more power in that respect than any other man. He says the American people like to be humbugged or scammed, and the greater the fake, the easier it is to work it. Melbourne made a fortune in the business and spent it like a prince. That just speaks to our gullibility is trust. You know, that's what they call gullibility. And I would still like to be able to trust people, although it's getting harder, I have to admit. But they took advantage of us. You know, evil thrives by just taking advantage of our kindness and our trust. It's sad, isn't it?
It is sad, but I do hope that people who take advantage of our, or attempt to take advantage of our trust, don't mistake our, I don't know, kindness for a tolerance to be had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Okay. Don't lie to me. You know, don't do this. And don't think I'm not going to come back at you if you come for me. I'm not that tolerant. Forgiveness is not of my in my bailiwick right now. So, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And on this famine stuff, I mean, whether it's man-made or not, I doubt it. Because controlling the climate like it's happening now is, I think, so far above the power that we can manifest as humans in our technology right now, that it's got to be something else. Because even if the Chinese, the Russians, and the Americans are using weather modification warfare, it's a small percentage of what happens to change our weather. The sun is the major driver in the solar system here. It hits not only the Earth, but the other inner planets. So watching the sun and the extra ultraviolet C and other ultraviolet rays coming through, and the activity on the surface of the sun I talked about earlier in the show, that tells us it's not in our hands, humans' hands, to do this, even though they've, you know, limited to warfare, weather warfare, and that kind of stuff. But if you look at slide 54, it's an interview between Dr. Jordan B. Peterson and his guest, Michael Yon, who is a journalist, right? Now, it's, you know, it talks about not only famine and how it's happening. This guy, Yon, he travels all over the world. He's been in Japan and Germany 4 or 5 years. I mean, he speaks several languages. And, you know, he just reports what we're not getting told. And he's one of America's youngest Green Berets. He was a Green Beret at 19 years of age. And Dr. Peterson discusses with him the current state of affairs across the globe. And it's not just famine, it's other things. It's war and the cycle of war, famine, you know, and civil unrest. You know, it's, I learned an awful lot watching this. You have to wade through, you know, it's probably hour and a half, but I'd say the first hour is probably the most important stuff. So go and look at that. I mean, he's written, you know, 3 books. They were in Japanese because the Japanese hired him to write these books on the current situation and, you know, what is coming. And it surprised me to see the Japanese wanted that. But it was a Japanese extremist group that eventually kicked him out of Japan because of what he wrote and what he was saying. He's been in 80 countries. He's well-traveled. And, you know, I just found the interview incredibly enlightening about what is happening. It's more proof, more details of what's happening. Anyway, have a look at that. Okay. Excuse me. Slide 49. Scientists are doing something that I really find unsettling. They have used controversial gain-of-function research to resurrect the deadly Spanish flu that killed millions of people in the world in the early 20th century. The team of gain-of-function researchers in Canada and the U.S. reports that they have successfully recreated the 1980 influenza virus and used it to infect monkeys. And I wondered, why is it, you know, I mean, why is it that to resurrecting a thing that we know if it gets out, which it probably will, can kill huge percentages of the population? And then I thought, well, okay, the Bible does say that many will die of pestilence, you know, like 50, 60% of the population will die of pestilence, which is, you know, viruses and bacterial things that infect us. And so I look at this and I say, are you guys crazy? I mean, you live on the planet too. You know, are you going to kill yourself with this? Anyway, it's going to make places just uninhabitable because they'll have the Spanish flu again. And it takes a while to get rid of it, even in the soil and stuff. It's, you know.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I mean,
it's just madness everywhere. Oh, and biblically, in slide 45, a biotech company wants to take human DNA and create artificial embryos that could be used to harvest organs for medical transplants. On the surface, that sounds pretty neat, doesn't it? The embryo is the best organ-making machine and the best 3D bioprinter that we've tried to, and we've tried to emulate what it does. Okay. I ask these kind of questions. Okay, if you're growing an embryo, you know, artificially, in this thing, so it has organs. Does it have a soul?
It's a good question. I was going to ask that. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
we should not be playing on this field, in my view. We should not be doing this.
No, we don't know enough. The good Lord can just touch a body and heal it and put everything back to where it should be according to the plan of your DNA. So this would not be needed in his kingdom. There's a way that they can just do that by, you know, that Christ can just do that, and his disciples and ministers can touch people that are in trouble physically or mentally and heal them. We don't need this kind of stuff. It's borderline to what happened in the giants before the flood. Those giants and hybrid chimeras that were generated in by the fallen ones, it's when they were messing with the human DNA to create different humans. I don't think they were being able to give them a soul, but these creatures were being created in the lab. And here we see this happening again, whether it's for ostensibly very peaceful and very practical things to grow replacement part for us. It is the blind leading the blind here. We're in an area that we shouldn't mess with until we get the creator of the planet here to tell us, okay, this is what works, this doesn't work, and I'll take care of it. It's people obviously that don't have a founding in the Bible, in prophecy and in history in the Bible that are doing this. I mean, on the surface, it sounds like a very practical thing. And I suppose if you could take a slice of your liver and put it in a petri dish and do magic things with it so it grows you a new liver, that wouldn't be so bad. But an entire embryo, functioning embryo baby that you're going to kill, decide to harvest its organ, that bothers me a lot.
Obviously, and they—I'm sure they could feel pain, right? I mean, I don't know, but I do know this: we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't be in that, this is beyond science. This is the horror, I think. This is—it's just horrific. We shouldn't be doing this. But.
I know. Anyway, a little lighthearted thing, or kind of not a major crisis. In slide 51. Bees and butterflies, they need water. And then the bees have a certain class of worker bees that will go to a water source and drink it in and store it inside them, and then go back to the hive and share it with other worker bees to help in the making of honeycomb and honey, etc. What I found interesting in this here, you can help bees and butterflies survive a drought. Bees not only drink water, they also have preferences as to the type of water they prefer to drink. And you think, oh, well, fresh water, give them clean water, which we do out in our bird bath. But bees typically prefer dirty water, which could even be gathered from gutters and puddles with cow dung or dog urine in them. Now enjoy your next bite of honey. Oh, dear. Anyway, we put water out for them. That picture there is from our bird bath showing the bees hanging on the edge down there and stocking up water to go fly over. Well, I can see the guy's house. He has the hives behind us there, and they go over there and make honey, which, he then sells. But they come over here to drink water because we've got so much of it around for them. And so I'm saying to myself, well, why do I clean this bird bath every day when it gets a bit of leaf and junk in it? It's a little cloudy or whatever. And it's because the bees like it because it's got minerals or something and it's got taste. Who knew? Anyway, that's your lightness for the nice. Day. Yeah, they're there every day. I go out there and they don't sting or anything. They let me change your water when I need to, and they probably all grumble. I didn't realize that, but then they'll gather back around the edge and start drinking again. And so we occasionally have to go out there and scoop out some of them that have gotten off of the edge because they can't swim, and they buzz around in a circle in the water and either drown if we don't toss them out. But I marvel at the fact that they know that we're helping them, and they don't sting us or anything. Huh. There you go.
It's good. Good.
Another kind of interesting thing, slide 47, Barack Obama explains, he goes further than he did in one of the interviews we saw, how society will change if and when we learn that aliens exist. He's not saying that they do, you understand, but he can't tell you everything because it's classified. But if and when we learn that aliens exist, he says, I'm actually being serious here. There's footage and records of objects in the skies that we don't know exactly what they are. We can't explain how they moved, their trajectory, etc. They did not have an easily explainable pattern. Obama hopes that if alien life were discovered, it would remind Americans of their common humanity but he also fears the discovery could also lead to further discord. Now, this is what I said, the cosmic conspiracy. The whole thing about UFOs, flying saucers, aliens, that whole scenario, which has been created to lead us to a world order, a global world order under the leadership of Satan's man, the Antichrist. The whole purpose of that alien landing, that alien presence being brought to the public attention officially, is to unite not only people in the United States, but all over the planet against a common possible threat that turns out to be friendly. So this common threat, which Reagan spoke about the United Nations, you know, the invasion of little green men would bring everybody together because they start looking as a planet rather than as, you know, nations and states and that kind of stuff. And you see hints of this in what Obama said here. It's falling to plan exactly as I wrote. I mean, this is a long time ago, but 78. And I knew then that this is where we're headed because of, you know, work behind the scenes with the government or with Dr. Teller's people anyway. So there, it's proving what I forecast. And the interesting thing about it is that when they do take over this world government, that the Illuminists, you know, these enlightened globalists, many of them are going to be stood up against the wall or locked up or killed. They're not going to be useful because Satan doesn't want people that he can't control or trust. And those have proven to be traitors to their own kind. So he's going to get rid of them. That's the good news behind this arrival.
Right.
I saw an article here, which was really quite interesting. I like it. In slide 48, this guy has made a company, flying ATV. It might be bring farming into a new reality, as it were. I mean, farmers have to use helicopters, which are pretty fuel expensive. They have to use horses and stuff to go out and round up cattle that stray from the herd. And when they've got these big production fields, you know, ranches and stuff. And so this guy said, look, I'm going to make a super, drone. That's what it amounts to, that you can get on as the farmer. You can get on and you can herd your cattle from the air. You can check where your missing cattle are and, inspect your fence line, all kinds of things farmers do that take a lot of time and energy on horseback or your truck or, you know, tracking all kinds of weather. And if you click on the picture there and that, you see a picture at the top there without the guy on it, what this manned ATV, drone type thing looks like. It's just an amazing concept. And I think the batteries for it are in those six pods there you see in that picture at the top. Yeah, that one there. And, you do have to charge the batteries and change them. And so he says to the farmer, he says, look, you can make solar charging things to charge them offline, have them planted around your property so that you can fly out, do, whatever searching you're doing or rounding up. And if you're getting low on energy, go to the nearest stash of batteries and charge it up on solar. Change your batteries over on your aircraft and then, zoom on back home to the ranch. These aren't high speed things, but I think they can go up to 400 foot altitude above ground level, which can be, rising ground or whatever, going up to hillsides and mountains. But, I like this. I mean, I want one of those things. That'd be a cool ATV, wouldn't it?
I'm looking at that.
Well, the article has more pictures and things in it.
And folks listening to this on Globalstar as well as on Spreaker and other platforms, definitely go to standale.com and check these images out. Very interesting how this would. Is there a side view there or no?
If you go to the actual article, it's got all kinds of views.
Okay.
You can do that. You can just press the text down there. It'll take you to the article. Right. Now, the guy that was writing the article, the journalist, was visiting this company, Recon, it's called. And he says, I got in to fly this thing. And he says, I pressed the takeoff button on the center console. Now, this is electric. This is not gas or whatever. Electric cars, for instance, when you press the go button on those, you feel the grunt, it presses you back in your seat. You get G-forces in the inertia with an electric vehicle because of the way they work. Well, okay, he says, I pressed the takeoff button on the center console. For a moment, nothing happened. As I was about to tell Mick, that's the guy that invented it, that something was wrong. Wrong, though. The motors whirred louder as the Recon lunged or lurched sideways. Before I could react, I felt a weight on my chest and my heart jump into my throat as it lifted me off the ground and into the sky. So there's a takeoff, you know, like program that you can push a button on that, and it takes you off rather suddenly. And so when he says he could feel that stuff, the weight on the chest, that reminded me of the torque that you feel in an electric car with electric motors. It really gives you a joy. I kind of like that. But anyway, that's...
Yeah, GTO yeah. does the same thing. Gas power GTO does the same thing. But
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah. Potato, potato. Yeah, it's good.
No, that's anyway. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, let me just see if that article there... If we click on that, do we get to the pictures? Yeah, you have to, when you get to the article, oh, come on.
We already did the pictures on that one.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Okay, well, it's, okay, well, yeah. And you can read the whole article, pushing the continue reading thing. It's on the Microsoft Network News, but yeah.
We did all of them. Actually, fascinating. So again, folks, go to standeo.com, in the show interest page. And make sure you click on the various images. If you're listening to this when you get home, or if you're in a driving or whatever, when you have a chance to do that, and bookmark standeo.com regardless, and visit empshield.com, promo code Hagman, and all look at all of the intellectual materials that Stan and Holly have for sale, and become Patreon members as well. Okay, sir, go ahead.
All right, slide 46. What to do before a G5 or greater geomagnetic storm hits the planet. Approximately four times a year in the solar cycles, you know, the 11-year solar cycle, about four times in that cycle, you get a G5 class magnetic storm, which is the high level. It's kind of like it reminds you of the 1859 Carrington event. And so why are they putting this article up? If you click on it, this is on Tech Evaluations. It says, what to do before a G5 or greater geomagnetic storm hits? How do you prepare for it? And I noticed that they didn't put in there, you need an EMP shield to, you know, keep your things, your electronics working, or protect your backup power, whatever. But it's interesting that they sit in here and they say, you know, you get prepared a certain amount of, food for so many days, and they list, they discuss about what happens in the American power grid goes down a bit, and they list in there all the different things that you've got to look at that have to be taken care of. And they recommend only 2 weeks to 6 months of food and water, and they give you a suggestion. I mean, that's a no-brainer, but there's also medicine and stuff that they said, and they said have cash on hand. Well, it's just down under where you are now, Eric, that they get into the specifics of how to prepare. And they do put toilet paper as a must, but the cash on hand is not going to be much good if everybody is on digital or some other system. Excuse me. I looked at this list, and a lot of it's good stuff, but things that they should have already been prepared to do. They're simple survival things. And,
I mean, how long have you been talking about this? For crying out loud, your system could have saved the day. And by the way, from the makers of the same makers of ShamWow, I have my. I'm ready for it. I've got my personal prep kit right here. Again, from the makers. Actually, this is Eric the Tech MacGyver. Yeah. Eric the Tech MacGyver made, and you can buy this on our website, folks. $99.95 and free shipping. Okay. And there you go.
Right. You have to laugh.
I'm trying to make you laugh, Stan. I know it's rough.
You did. You did.
Okay.
All right. Oh, dear. There's a find in Spain, a Stonehenge that suddenly surfaced when the water dried up in this area that it doesn't dry up in very often. And that's in slide 43, Eric. It's called the Spanish Stonehenge. It's reemerged amid Europe's sizzling drought. It's the fourth time the structure located in a reservoir has become visible. The dolmen of Guadalperal, also known as the Spanish Stonehenge, is revealed to be due to the receding waters, blah, blah, blah. And you click on the picture and look at it. I've been trying to figure out, you know, it does have the stones similar to those in Stonehenge in England. These stones that we're seeing here in the Spanish one are flat, rectangular, thin, you know, and but they're arranged in like, it's almost like a spiral instead of just circle. If you're looking at it there, you can, it's not a, you know, like a closed in circle. It does seem like there's a, no, it's following like a vortex, you know, like a flow downhill period, a pattern. I've been trying to figure this one out. It's got me puzzled what it would do, but there it was, in I guess in an area where, you know, water was stored. And anyway, maybe you can figure it out, guys that are smarter than me out there. I don't know. Another kind of interesting thing that happened in 2016. I just ran across this while I was doing research, and it's in slide 44. It's from December of 2016. Some rabbis in Israel believe that president-elect, that was when Donald Trump had just been elected, could be a Messiah or his forerunner, like John the Baptist. According to a pastor, which is, you know, Tom Horn, according to Horn, 300 years ago, a rabbi he identified as Horowitz set the date for the Messiah's arrival on the Jewish calendar in the year 5777, which translates to a period between 2016 and 2017. Now, as they're looking at Donald Trump, one of the rabbis illustrated how his name and the numerology or gematria of his name actually means Messiah. And you can read the article there by clicking on that. That's interesting. I had not seen that article that Tom was talking about there. And you can, of course, read the article on the text there. It's in.
I got to tell you, I'm not really a fan of that stuff. Okay.
No, I know. But he's quoting the rabbis. He's not saying that's the truth. But the rabbis in Israel, we know that Israel is not exactly kosher to what the Lord will have them be doing right now. So it just kind of tells you that, you know, this is where they're at, and they're looking for a Messiah. Maybe someone else is on this. Well, in fact, yeah. I got sent a thing by one of our listeners here, and she says, it's in slide 40. If you click on slide 40, it's, I think, 51 reasons or something like that, she says, about why Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, is the Antichrist. Let's see here. Yeah, it was on John B. Wells' show. They talked about it. 51 main points of proof that Bashar Assad is the man of sin, lawlessness, son of perdition, the one people call the end time Antichrist. And it's a long article, but it does detail things that they found that qualify Bashir to be the Assyrian Antichrist. I'll read you some of what I've done. You remember my slide 13, Eric, where I had potential Antichrist candidates. Bashar Assad is definitely one of them. And but they've found more proof here. And I'm just trying to think here. Leap. Let me just find it here. In the article that I'm putting you to, I'm looking for what they say there. I guess it's in my stuff. There is a scripture that says that the Antichrist, the man of sin, will leap out of tribe of Dan, you know, leap forward, leap out to become who he is. Just trying to see there. Let me just go back and go over to slide 13 myself. But this is okay. I think it's where I do it. Okay. I'm just reading on that slide 13. Okay. When Moses gave his final blessing to the children of Israel and of Dan, he said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan, which is Syria. Syria, you know, connects to northern Jordan, you know, and through the Golan Heights, they're all connected there. But Assyria is where, you know, the lion will leap forward like this. Now, bear that in mind as I go back up on my page here to slide 13 on Assad. Okay. Okay. Assad's dad, Hafez al-Assad, was the president of Syria for 30 years. He changed the family name from al-Wahash, which means beast or savage in Arabic, to al-Assa, lion in Arabic. A lion. Bashar Assad's real name is Bashar Wahash, Bashar the beast or savage. As for why Assad might be called a Solomon, there is an ancient temple site located in the village of Ain Dara, there in Syria, northwest of Aleppo. It predated Solomon's temple by about 300 years and bears two giant footprints carved in the floor of it. The 33 of the architectural elements found in Ain Dara were tallied with 65 of the features mentioned in the biblical description of Solomon's temple. So it's similar, you know, in many ways, exactly to the description of Solomon's temple. And, you know, I have reason to believe that the Antichrist of this age will be a Solomon type, you know, archetype, and whether his name will be Suleiman or like that or not, he will be similar to the behavior, the pattern that is given to Solomon in the Bible. There are many more things you can click on that in that my slide 13 in the main site there, where you can get to the discussion of why Assad is a potential. There are some things he hasn't done yet, but let's see. Okay, Assad is an Alawite, a Shia sect of Islam. Now the Shiites are kind of warlike, they, you know, but he's different. Islam, you know, Shia sect of Islam, the Assad celebrate. They celebrate Easter and Christmas and use bread and wine in their religious services. Sunnis call them little Christians. So even though this is an Islamic sect, Assad appears to semi-Christian, which is against the God of his fathers. So, you know, which is, would be Allah in his base religion. Anyway, there are other descriptions on the page of other potential Antichrist, but I point that to you just to consider that he could very, very well be the guy.
Well, you know, with Damascus as well, the prophecy of Damascus, who knows? I mean,
yeah, well,
it could be related.
Well, okay? Yeah, just stretching the back. You know how it goes.
No, I do.
You get that way as you age a bit.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left, Stan.
Two or ten?
Two minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. Well, I guess you know, it's hard to give a lot of advice to people at the moment, but I had a dream vision over the weekend, which has I'll tell it very quickly. I was walking through a market in Old Jerusalem, and I was looking for presents. And I bought from one vendor, I bought a little marble-looking thing, blue, and then a dish about that size there, like that, to put the marble in. And I then saw a parchment or something like that, about like that big. And it had the Hebrew letter hey, like that, and a little scratch up here on it. And then I walked with these presents into a home there, which was, you know, like a normal Western home. It was they were having a party there, and everyone was just, you know, walking around and talking and eating. And as I came in, there was the bride. It was a wedding party, and she was standing next to a window with the sun shining through it. And I went up to her, and she was expecting me. I was her best friend, and I gave her that little ball thing and the cup. And, you know, she was very thankful for it. Now, I woke up and I realized that I wasn't part of the bride then, if I'm that person. And I looked up to try to figure out what that would be. So if you look up in your Hebrew and internet, Shoshben, S-H-O-S-H-B-E-N, it's the best friend of the bride and of the groom. And he takes care of the bride, getting her to where she needs to be for the wedding, and he protects both her and the groom. He's, as the best friend, he's a gatekeeper. So I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Don't know what that means precisely.
No.
And folks, email Stan your thoughts. You welcome that?
Sure. Sure. Okay.
All right. Folks, Stan Dale from StanDale.com. God bless you, my friend. Thank you so very much.
You too, sir.
Out of time. All right. Good night, everyone.